This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
It's the 115 versus This Means More FC, the treble winners versus the Blaze of Glory hopefuls. It's City versus Liverpool with the Premier League title on the line. More importantly, it's Friday, March 8th. I'm Adam Booker.
I'm Ollie Kirsch.
I'm Al Nobbins.
And this is a City Report podcast.
It's here for Gundogan. It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. It's just a small matter of a Premier League game at Anfield this weekend, and we will pick through all of the main talking points over the next 30 minutes or so. Before we do that, a very special welcome to the one and only L. Nobbins, who is losing his City Report virginity on the eve of potentially the biggest game of the season. L. Nobbins, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. Yeah, brilliant. Really happy to be on. Been wanting to come on for a while. I've just been a bit busy, but we're here now.
Exactly. Yeah, this is, Ollie, I got to say, this is the perfect podcast voice. If I've ever heard the perfect podcast voice, I think I've heard it just now.
You say that, but me and you don't have faces for YouTube, so we've been honing our podcast voices anyway.
I certainly don't have a face for YouTube. Yeah, there I am.
Well, listen, the Nobcast is a great YouTube channel, which obviously is down in the description. Links to all of Nobbins' stuff is in the description of this episode, so hit those links and follow all of his stuff. But we'll get straight into it, Ollie, because obviously there's tons to talk about heading into Sunday's match at Anfield. First of all, how are the nerves? You know, I felt pretty calm the week after the big win in the derby on Sunday, and now the preview pieces are coming out. I'm kind of making my plans to watch the game on Sunday, all of that sort of hullabaloo. And, you know, I'm starting to kind of feel the magnitude of it all.
I'm all right, to be honest. It's weird. I've been a little bit up and down this week. I mean, it might be the fact that I'm now sat on my second Jack Daniels on the rocks. That's drink responsibly. I think we have to say that, right? We're obligated. I've been up and down this week. Little self-plug, obviously, early this week I did a little bit with the Sportsman. I was with Steve from Redmen, and we did an hour talking about the game, bit of a preview, Pep, Klopp, etc. And the nerves were kind of kicking in, mixed in with the high after the derby. But now I'm fairly calm, and there's one reason for that, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it a little bit more, but what Trent said. Not only that, but Haaland and Diaz's reactions today. I think he has poked the hornet's nest today, or yesterday. The squad, if we needed any more motivation, he's just provided it. And I actually think it's quite foolish on his part, because the last thing you want to do when you've got a bunch of injuries heading into a game against what is still the best team in Europe, well, world champions, actually, the last thing you want to do is galvanise that squad. And we do see City have that reaction. We saw it after we had the Premier League charges. We've seen it on various occasions where when this team is pissed off, somebody pays for it. And I think Sunday is the perfect opportunity to do that. So, I'm all right. I'm feeling good.
Nabits, are you one for this kind of bulletin board material type shtick that the Trent comments saying that Liverpool's success over the years has meant more to them and their fans because of the financial disparity between the two clubs, which is a laughable theory to have. But do you feel like this has actually been something that could galvanize the City squad and give them motivation if they even need it anymore?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we've seen that in the past, haven't we? We saw it last season when infamously the 115 charges got dropped. I was actually at the Etihad for the next game after. I think it was against Aston Villa we played, and you could clearly see the players were impacted by everything that had happened in the background. The fans obviously got up for it as well, and we went on that incredible run, which ended in the treble win. So. Absolutely. This is a team who historically has responded well to that sort of criticism. If you recall, like the Ruben Diaz interview last season, again, just preceding the Bayern Munich game, the reporter basically said, there's a lot of fast players. You're all slow. How are you going to deal with them? And Diaz like infamously replied, well, you'll see on the pitch. And as we saw on the pitch, we absolutely destroyed Bayern Munich. So I think Ollie's absolutely spot on, to be fair, in terms of the theory, in terms of what the history tells us. This should galvanize the City players as if they needed any more motivation. And I agree, it's a very odd thing for Trent to say in any circumstance, never mind on the eve of, a few days before, what is potentially going to be a title-defining game. It just seemed very naive, very foolish, and if you showed me that quote without any context, I would have assumed that it wasn't like a seasoned professional who said it. I would have assumed it was like one of these like football Twitter accounts, like trying to garner clicks. It was a very odd thing to say, unprovoked as well, from what I can tell. The City players have responded in kind, but that's because they've been directly asked. I don't think Trent was, being poked and prodded for that answer. I think he gave it of his own volition. So very unusual. And yeah, obviously from our perspective as City fans, it should hopefully give us even more motivation to go to Anfield and try to get a result there.
It is a weird one, Ollie. I'm going to ask you just straight up. Does City's success mean less?
You know what? I need to pull up speaking, the tweet and read this out.
Speaking of poking the bear, this is a question, a perfect question for our Lord Bert, Ollie Kirsch.
Oh, it was fun. There's a very, very, very funny tweet that I saw before. I'll give the credit. It was to a Gordino on Twitter. Trent's right. After coming from two goals down to beat Villa to win the title on the final day in front of a bouncing stadium, I merely shrugged and said, alas, our wage bill's 15% higher than theirs. It's fucking outrageous. And do you know what? The only reason we have anything good in life is because we have bad, right? If you don't have that contrast, what's great? It's why people that have everything go insane. I don't know if anyone's a fan of Twilight Zone, but there's an episode where a guy dies, goes to heaven, and in heaven he's got everything he wants, but he slowly goes insane over the years. You know, he plays a hand of poker and he gets a royal flush every time. And he goes insane, and in the end he says to one of the angels, why am I so miserable? This is heaven. And the angel just laughs at him and goes, mate, this is hell. So the fact that City have literally been in, I don't want to say hell, because even still there's clubs that have been through far worse than us, but we were for a very long time a fallen giant. We dealt with some right shit. And now we've had our come up to the very, very, very pinnacle of what can be achieved in English football, which is a treble. To say that means more, I'm kind of annoyed that I'm having to go to these lengths to discuss it, because it's just a fucking outrageous notion in the first place. But the this means more crap. And he's saying that with the Carabao Cup in his hands, right? It's just ridiculous, man. It's just disrespectful. It's plain disrespectful. It's disrespectful to the fans. It's disrespectful to the players that have achieved it. And as I said, you can see Haaland feels disrespected. Ruben Dias feels disrespected. Although Dias especially was incredibly professional with his comments in response. But what a twat.
Well, it should add a little bit of spice if they needed any more spice to the game on Sunday. But I do want to take it on to the matters on the pitch. And we'll stick with the big picture, Nobbins, because so much is being made about this with obviously it being Klopp and Pep's last time playing at Anfield and all of that kind of stuff with Liverpool trying to ride off in a blaze of glory with Klopp's last season and get him one more title and all of that. But how much does this one game actually matter in the big picture of the title race? Is it a must win for City? Is it a must not lose? Is it the kind of game that the winner is going to win the title? We can't forget about Arsenal in this scenario. Put into perspective kind of what the actual realistic magnitude of this fixture is.
It's certainly a must not lose, that's for sure. Obviously, if we lose it, Liverpool will go 4 points clear. I don't have the exact stats in front of me, but there was an Opta generator, of like a probability of who would win the title based on the results. And as it stands, City are like 54% likely to win the title, according to Opta or whoever this data provider was. If they lost the game, that goes down to like, 25%. So it's not zero. So it's not like you lose and you definitely lose the title. However, it's going to be nearly an insurmountable amount of points to claw back from Liverpool, because it wouldn't just be 4 points, because they've got a much superior goal difference as well. So it's actually 5 points. So we'd have to, in addition to winning all of our games, we would also have to hope that Liverpool, lost at least twice, drew three times. Is that going to happen with their running? Probably not. So I think a loss is basically, that just cannot be entertained as an idea for City. And even for Liverpool as well, it's a must not lose for them. That's why I think that maybe the most likely result is actually a draw. If City win, massive, because we'll be back in charge, which is where we like to be historically. We like to be leading the pack rather than chasing them down under Guardiola. Would give us massive, I think, a morale and mentality boost as well, because in my opinion, recently, the recent games and performances, I've started to see the treble winners. Again, sort of like the past few performances, I've been really impressed compared to the earlier in the season. So if we can sort of like solidify that with a very good result and performance against Liverpool, I think that then snowballs into, a reasonably comfortable win against our other title rival, Arsenal, who play thereafter. And then that will lead into basically City winning the title. So I do think if City win, we win the title. I think that if we lose, I don't want to say we don't win the title, but it becomes not impossible, incredibly tricky. And if it's a draw, it probably asks more questions than it answers.
Yeah, I mean, Ollie, given the fact that this is, the 27th game in the season and there'll be around 30 points on offer from here on out, it's certainly not insurmountable given what we've seen City overcome in past title races. However, the psychological boost that I think Liverpool get from winning this game and moving 4 points clear, that psychological aspect might be the part that is insurmountable.
Yeah, this is the problem. I said earlier in the week, I don't think this is out and out title decider, but if Liverpool do win, I think they're well on the way. And I think we'll struggle to claw it back. If we win, it's going to go down to the wire. Unfortunately, just given the relative positions, with them being a point ahead, with the psychological aspects at play, the fact that City will be putting more priority on the FA Cup and Champions League than Liverpool will on the FA Cup and Champions League light. I would be very pessimistic if we lose this game. Very, very pessimistic. And that's not like me. You know what I'm like. I can be a little bit cynical, but I can usually find routes out. But I just think with the boost Liverpool will get, with the Klopp leaving factor as well, the fact that we have struggled for consistency, I think it will be a death knell for us, if for our title race anyway, if we lose on Sunday.
Well, famously, you predicted City to win the treble last season in about January. Mm-hmm. And of course, that went on to come true, along with our very own Andrew Detmer. Nobbins, if we're going off of your theory that this is a must not lose for City, this feels like it has 18-19 Liverpool away written all over it, which for me was one of the cagiest big six clashes I can remember City being a part of, in, especially in the Pep Guardiola era, where we've become used to this free-flowing attacking football with all these beautiful patterns of play. And that very much was, until maybe the latter stages of the Champions League going on 19-20 and onwards, that game in 18-19, where obviously we were, you know, a Riyad Mahrez missed penalty away from stealing a victory there, that feels maybe more like we're going to get this weekend, as opposed to what we've seen in recent clashes with Liverpool, which was a bit more heavy metal, a bit more direct football. Considering it's as you said, a must not lose, that feels like the type of game we're going to get.
Yes, yeah, certainly from a Liverpool perspective, I think. They've obviously got no Alisson, they've got no Trent. There's question marks around Curtis Jones. Konate potentially picked up an injury in the Europa League. Not 100% what the details are there. But yeah, this is not a Liverpool at full strength, shall we say. So I would be very surprised if Liverpool played, you know, how they played against us in the 17-18 season, where they absolutely just overran us for, you know, like the first half and won the game in like that sort of 30 minutes. I think from Liverpool's perspective, it's probably going to be more akin to what we saw last season. Not as defensive from them, but certainly that's more the side of the play they'll be erring on. And I think that from a City perspective, I expect it to be a very controlled and measured performance from City. I don't expect, you know, players like Doku, for example, to start. I don't think Pep would do that. I think he's going to approach it very cautiously. But if there is going to be one team more sort of going for a victory, I think it probably would be City, given the context of the current state of affairs in the title race and also the context of Liverpool's injury situation. So yeah, it's definitely going to be more like 18-19 away, where we try to steal a goal with a missed penalty, rather than, as you say, going there, trying to absolutely overrun them and trying to properly dominate them out and out. I think it's going to be quite a tight, cagey, nervous game from both sides.
Ollie, if you're Pep, how do you approach this? Is it death by a million cuts, or is it try and blitz them and maybe steal an early lead with Haaland in behind and that kind of thing? Or is it, you know, you're putting Kovacic into the lineup, taking out an attacker and really trying to smother them and control the game?
I mean, we say steal an early lead. I think regardless, from minute zero, we will be trying to score.
But you know what I mean. I mean, we've seen, I think if you look at, I think City-Liverpool is the perfect fixture to see in recent seasons the kind of the devil and angel that are on Pep Guardiola's shoulders, because we've absolutely blitzed them at home in past times, and we've gone there and been very cagey. And you know, you look at last season, which obviously City lose on that freak breakaway where Cancelo stepped up and missed the ball on Salah. That was a game that felt like City weren't necessarily going there to win. I think that was when we saw the first back five of the season that kind of lasted for 2 or 3 months, when City got really, really stale. So we've seen Pep kind of potentially be caught in two minds from time to time going there, because I genuinely think he's afraid of Anfield. I hate to admit I genuinely think he's afraid of it.
To answer the question directly, Liverpool have a depleted midfield. They have a terribly depleted midfield. It has to be death by a million cuts, right? We have to control this game. We have to silence the crowd, or at least bore them into submission. You know, I detest the City our boring label, but we need to be boring on Sunday. Not cagey, there's a difference, but we need to frustrate the hell out of them, because they do not have a combative midfield. They do not have a midfield that is capable of dominating that area of the pitch ahead of Rodri, ahead of De Bruyne, ahead of Foden, ahead of Bernardo, etc. So that's how we've got to approach it. We've got to grind them down. And I think that makes sense in two ways, right? One of the things Pep says is that the quicker you go forward, the quicker the ball comes back at you, and the more vulnerable you are to counter-attacks. Counter-attacks will be Liverpool's number one weapon against us. I think we're all expecting that. So if we can build up in a deliberately controlled manner and keep the tempo of the game quite slow, Liverpool will have very limited opportunity coming back the other way to break as well. So that is how I want to see us play. I want to see the very slow tiki-taka at its very best.
All right, we're going to go for a quick break. We'll be back in a moment to chat about potential team news and look at the bigger picture of the Premier League versus the Champions League.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. If you are new here, please hit follow, hit subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review, unless it is a shit one. Nobbins, I'll come to you first. I want to talk about the team news. We were talking a little bit before hitting record about what potentially City are going to do up front. I want to start at the back, though. Given the threat on the break we have from Liverpool, I think probably the only real question mark for me is that left back between Ake and Gvardiol. I think Gvardiol has been sensational in stretches this season. He's also had his stretches of kind of finding his feet in this City team. But Nathan Ake has been probably City's most consistent defender for going on 2 seasons now. We don't know necessarily what the fitness is for Mohamed Salah, but if Salah sneaks into the team, me personally, I'd prefer Nathan Ake to be the one following up and down that touchline. What do you think?
Yeah, it's not even a question for me. It has to be. Gvardiol's only just come back from injury against Copenhagen. Ake has a very good history of locking up the deadliest wingers in the division. You think of Salah and Saka last season in particular. I'm going to work under the assumption that Salah will start and that he will play and that he will play well. So we need our best 1v1 defender out there. And as much as I love Gvardiol, I highly rate what he's offered the City side this season, certainly on the ball, certainly in the different shapes that he's allowed City to play this season. You've just got to go back to basics in respect of winning your duels in these sorts of games, because that could define the game. It has to be Ake at left back, to be honest. I know you said that the back four is like probably going to pick itself. I would personally have Akanji instead of Kyle Walker. I don't think that's going to happen.
Interesting, because I think the tide has kind of turned on the general opinion of Kyle Walker in the last few weeks, because I think earlier in the season, people were starting to feel like his time was coming to an end. He had a couple of high level mistakes, but he was sensational against United, dealing with what is a really pacey attack. And considering Liverpool probably is going to use that pace and their ability to hit you in such a direct manner, it kind of feels like this is the perfect Kyle Walker game.
Maybe. I would still play Akanji. If Luis Diaz was a player like Mbappe, Vinicius, Rashford, then I think I probably would agree with you. And I'd go, yeah, just get Rashford in there. Sorry, get Walker in there. But I can't look away from the fact that what was our best back four last season? You know, how did we line up against Inter Milan in the Champions League final? And Kyle Walker was not in there. If I have a look at our best defensive displays this season in terms of like individual 1v1 performances of our defenders defending, it's Everton and it's the Bournemouth game. And in both of those games, we kept clean sheets. And those are the only two games this season where we've lined up with that back four of Akanji, Diaz, Stones and Ake. We've not played that back four at any other point this season. So for me, that would be the back four. I don't think that will happen. Otherwise, Walker wouldn't have been rested against Copenhagen. So I'm sure Walker will start. But I personally think that Kanji's arguably been our best defender this season. I think that he should be rewarded with a start, but I can understand why he probably won't start.
It's not a bad issue to have, Ollie, is it? Do you bring in a Kanji who has been kind of Mr. Consistent since his very cheap move from Borussia Dortmund, or do you bring in Walker, who in these big games against, you know, pacey attackers has kind of been Europe's shutdown defender for years now?
Walker has to play. I think we saw against United that his age hasn't really affected his pace. When that man puts the afterburners on, he is still fucking lightning. And that is crucial. That is absolutely crucial. Apart from the lapse in concentration against Chelsea, which allowed Sterling in, I want to use the United game as a reference rather than Chelsea. Every time Garnacho tried to get on his bike to get in behind, Walker was there tracking him. Every time Rashford found a way through, Walker was there tracking him. And it's just so important, not only against a counter-attacking team like Liverpool, but a counter-attacking team like Liverpool that have got serious pace up top. If they can get Salah on the pitch, that'll probably be a front three of Salah, Diaz, Nunes. All three of them are quick. Walker's just that little bit quicker. So I don't think we have a choice. I'm going to agree with your opening statement for this bit, which is the only question really is about left back. Unfortunately, I don't think we have the tools at left back to deal with Mo Salah. I don't really think there's a left back in world football that necessarily has the tools to deal with Mo Salah. That's a compliment to Mo Salah, not a slight on, you know, Ake or Guardiola. He's still an excellent player, and if Mo Salah decides to have a good day, there's not much you can do about it from left back. So, six of one, half a dozen of the other there between Ake and Guardiola, I think. Centre-backs, Diaz, Stones, right-back, Kyle Walker.
All right, I think we'll move up the pitch a little bit. Obviously, Rodri is in there. The big question mark, Nobbins, comes with what we do, I would say, on the left wing, but I think there's a bit more of a domino effect than that. Obviously, no Jack Grealish. We heard from Pep that he still has some time to come back. We've also heard some rumblings that they feel internally maybe like they brought him back a little bit early, which is such a shame, because I think games like this are when Jack Grealish are, you know, he's the absolute key player for City. But no Jeremy Doku either, potentially. He did miss some training this week. I don't think most of us would expect him to start in this game anyways if he was fully fit. So how do you set up that front five or six, given that we have, you know, the guaranteed starters like Foden, Haaland, and De Bruyne, and Bernardo Silva probably? I think that question mark comes from, is a player like Mateo Kovacic or Mateus Nunes going to step in? Or do we want to keep the five attackers and throw Oscar Bob in there, which is obviously a bit of a wild card? But it feels like this is where the big, big question mark comes in for Pep.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a massive shame that Grealish is out, because he would have been vital to this game, to be honest. So I was umming and ahhing about the idea of having Nunes at left wing for a time, because I thought he played well there against, was it Luton, I think it was? I think he put in a really good shift there. But then the fact he didn't play on the left against Copenhagen basically tells me that's not going to happen. I think the Kovacic has to start, just from a pure control in the midfield perspective and just control of the game in general perspective, because he's so silky and calm on the ball when he's got Rodri playing near him, playing next to him. He also sort of unlocks another level to Rodri's game when Rodri goes forwards. Kovacic is more than capable of dropping back and filling in, and we've seen, you know, Rodri's output increase exponentially as a consequence of that. So I think Kovacic has to start in the midfield. Obviously, De Bruyne is going to start because he's De Bruyne. Obviously, Haaland starts because he's Haaland. I think that the wingers are Foden and Bernardo. I just don't know where I want them to play. So I don't know if I want Foden on the right or Foden on the left and vice versa with Bernardo, because when Bernardo went to the left against Man United, he played very well out there. He's a very versatile player. He can definitely play there. So maybe it won't be a case of you are just shackled to the left wing. Maybe, as we saw in the derby, we'll see Foden go from the right to the left and then to left central midfield, and De Bruyne coming from right central midfield and then rotating with Foden out at left wing. That could be a potential, again, just to cause confusion. It depends on like the game state as well. Like, you know, for example, if if like Foden's getting no joy in Robertson on the left, maybe try him on Liverpool's right up against Bradley, for example. So I think the play is to probably try to play those versatile players. And then even if it doesn't work initially, Pep can quite easily just swap them around. So in the first instance, I probably go Foden on the right so he can connect more with De Bruyne on that right central midfield slot. And then I do like the idea of having Bernardo out on the left initially. And as I say, you can easily swap if you feel the need.
There is only one way for this to go for me. I think with assuming Nunes is still walking around flipping everyone the bird unintentionally after that picture of his finger, the poor guy. I think it's got to be our strongest and most balanced front six, so to speak. I want to see Rodri with Kovacic. I want to see Bernardo on the right, pulling into midfield when required. I want to see Foden on the left. And Bernardo and Foden will be switching all game anyway. Kevin De Bruyne in behind Erling Haaland. I think considering that Doku's out, considering that Grealish is out, considering that Nunes is out, and considering that all the star men plus Kovacic are fit, yeah, I don't... Booker, I don't know about you, mate, but I don't think this should go any other way. Knowing Pep, there will be a curveball in there. But yeah, that's the front six for me.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think it kind of picks itself if you're looking for that balance of dynamism and control. It's interesting, Nobbins, you talk about Bernardo being on the left, because I remember all the way back to preseason of last season, so the treble winning season, and Bernardo was overlapping Jack Grealish in every preseason game on the left. And I remember thinking to myself, I've never seen Bernardo play this wide on the left this consistently. And it was gorgeous. I remember thinking I would love to see this in legitimate competitive football. Of course, we've never really seen it. But I do have shades of the Liverpool at home in the 18-19 season, which obviously many of us would consider to be one of the best games ever played on English soil. And Bernardo was playing in left midfield in that game. I think Sané and Sterling had started that game on the wings. And he had that lovely assist for the Aguero near post goal in that game. So, you know, we don't tend to think of Bernardo on that left wing, but actually he's been kind of deadly whenever he's there, and his ability to go to the byline and pull those little balls back across the box. And if you can get that kind of joy with Haaland and De Bruyne and Foden lurking around the penalty spot, then good things are going to happen. Before we get out of here, though, I do want to ask you guys one burning question. We had quite the debate. I wouldn't even call it a debate because it was a bit one-sided, but we had quite the conversation in our City Report group chat this morning. If you had to choose one, Nobbins, I'm going to put you on the hot seat here as it's your first time on the show. You had to choose one to win this season, the Champions League or the Premier League. What are you winning?
It never has been a question for me, Premier League, every single time. Every single time.
You fit like a glove here.
Even before we won the Champions League, because my logic is, I'm sure this like could take up a whole podcast on its own. My logic is you need to be the best team to win the Premier League. You don't necessarily need to be the best team to win the Champions League. I want my team to be regarded as the best team. Hence, I want to win the Premier League. I thought that before we won the Champions League, non-City fans, oh, you're only saying that because you've never won it. Well, we won it and I'm still saying the same thing. Also, four in a row. No one's ever done that before in English football. Never mind Premier League football, English football.
The narrative, Ollie, of City winning a record fourth in a row, doing something that United have never done, and also simultaneously stopping Liverpool from winning their second, Klopp winning his second in his final season, mm-hmm. and having him mm-hmm. ride off mm-hmm. into this metaphorical sunset, mm-hmm. the way that we've all known and loved him, which is close but no cigar. That's the narrative mm-hmm. you have to be aiming for.
Keep going, bro.
Jeff's
Keep
kiss.
Going. I'm nearly there.
That is staying in. We'll put a little explicit emblem on the bottom right corner of the show and keep that in.
Nah, I'm with you. And do you know what? Again, same as Nobbins here. Every time we've had this debate on the podcast, I say the same thing every time. Premier League is your bread and butter. It is a hollow victory to win the Champions League if you have not won the Premier League that season as well. Again, I go back to when Chelsea beat us in the Champions League final. Where did they finish in the league?
Fourth?
Yeah, somewhere around there. And then they win the Champions League Cup competition. You can be good on the day, have a little bit of luck on the day. The opposing manager doesn't start a defensive midfielder on the day. So, you know, but it's true. The Premier League is your bread and butter. Win the Premier League, do it domestically, be the champions at home, and then go and kick it in Europe. Yeah. So, plus for all the reasons you mentioned about Jurgen Klopp. So. Yeah, I'm with you on that, buddy.
Daily listeners will have already heard me say and list the things, the metaphysical things that I would sell in order for Jurgen Klopp to not go out in a blaze of glory. But that'll do for us. Let us know which one you would rather win, the Premier League or the Champions League, at City Report Pod on all social medias. Nobbins, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Oliver, thank you.
Cheers, buddy.
Listeners, thank you very much. Until next time, see you later.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.